Our next case is 13-713 in the matter of the foreclosure of liens for delinquent taxes versus the parcels of land encumbered with delinquent tax liens et al. For the appellant, we have Mr. Dayton.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, I am here on behalf of the appellant, Vanderbilt Mortgage Finance, Inc., and I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. The trial court, in allowing Vanderbilt to redeem the subject property, did nothing more than preserve the status quo. The trial court's decision to allow Vanderbilt to redeem did not transfer title to the subject property to Vanderbilt. Instead, the trial court's decision kept Brandy Wagner, the owner of the property, remaining in title, allowed Vanderbilt to keep its mortgage lien in place, and allowed the Coshocton County Treasurer to collect the exact same amount of taxes as if redemption had been denied. The Fifth District Court of Appeals reversed that decision of the trial court and held that the sole issue before it was whether mortgage holders such as Vanderbilt have a right to redeem property prior to the confirmation of the tax foreclosure sale pursuant to Ohio Revised Code 5721.25. This is also the sole issue now before this honorable court. Ohio Revised Code 5721.25 permits the redemption of delinquent land from a tax foreclosure sale by the payment of the delinquent tax bill by any person entitled to redeem the land. But who are these people entitled to redeem? Vanderbilt received the notice to owner of a parcel and those with interest in parcel required by Ohio Revised Code 5721.18.
Counsel, can you answer a question that may not be relevant, but it's bothering me?
Sure.
Was this an installment contract or was this a conventional mortgage? What was this? What was the instrument that generated your client's interest in the real estate?
I believe it was a conventional mortgage, Your Honor. This notice that was sent to Vanderbilt is reproduced in Vanderbilt's supplement to brief on pages numbered 7 and 8. If Your Honors would please look at that notice, you will see that it informs Vanderbilt that Vanderbilt is a lien holder with an interest in the described parcel.
Vanderbilt bid at the sheriff's sale?
The record is unclear as that. There were two sheriff's sales. The record is clear that Vanderbilt bid on the separate sheriff's sale.
Pardon me, please.
The record is clear, Your Honor, that that Vanderbilt bid on the separate sheriff's sale of the mobile home, but the record has not been established.
Did it bid in its mortgage? The amount of its mortgage?
Your Honor, there were two separate sheriff's sales that Vanderbilt would have had an opportunity to bid at both sheriff's sales or either sheriff's sale.
Why were there two sheriff's sales?
The treasurer made the decision to separately sell the mobile home from the land. And I'm not sure why the treasurer made that decision. The record's clear that Vanderbilt bid on the mobile home. Record has not been established as to whether there was a bid made.
Was the mortgage on the mobile home or on the real estate?
It was on both. It encumbered both. But the treasurer made the decision to separately sell the mobile home from the land.
What was the amount of the mortgage?
$85,000.
And what was the bid that it entered at the sheriff's sale where it did bid?
Where it did bid?
You said
it
Vanderbilt
bid $50,000.
Bid on a property, and I'm asking if they have an $85,000 mortgage, what was its bid at the sale that they did enter a bid?
Its bid, if I understand your question correctly, Vanderbilt successfully bought the mobile home.
For what amount of money?
$50,000+.
Okay.
But counsel, they bid on the real estate as well, but they were not the successful bidder, correct?
I don't believe that the record is clear as that. I agree that the treasurer has maintained that throughout these proceedings, but I don't believe that the record will show a bid by Vanderbilt on the property, on the real property itself. They did come up with the...
Well, where's that coming from in the record, that somebody got a bargain at $15,000 and the mortgage holder, who you're now telling us is owed $85,000, bid less than that? Where's that coming from?
Bid less than that bid less than that to purchase the purchase the mobile home. That was all it was required to bid. Its bid up to $50,000 was sufficient to obtain the mobile home.
I'm talking about the property, counsel. The property.
Yes.
There was two bids.
Yes.
One was the winning bid.
The winning bid was $15,100.
And the record seems to suggest that your client was the losing bidder. Is that or is that not supported by the record?
I do not believe that is supported by the record.
That's a no?
I do not believe it's supported by the record.
Counsel,
sure.
I don't mean to be difficult. I don't care what you believe.
Sure.
I'm asking you what's in the record.
The record does not establish that it was Vanderbilt that placed that bid. The sheriff's return shows there were two bids, that the second bid was to a Mr. Machette and that he bought it for $15,100. Now, I appreciate that appellant has asserted that it was Vanderbilt that placed that bid, but nowhere in my examination of the record do I see that there was a notation made as to who placed that first bid.
Well, who's your client?
Vanderbilt.
And they don't know whether they bid?
I'm sure they do. Yeah,
Well, did they or didn't they?
They did bid at the sheriff's sale, yes. But the record does not establish that. That's not established by the record.
Okay. Aren't we being a little cute here?
Look, I'm not trying to be.
Okay.
The notice that was received by Vanderbilt on page numbered 8 states that any time prior to the filing of an entry of confirmation of a sale, any owner or lien holder of or other person with an interest in a parcel may redeem the parcel. Thus, Vanderbilt was informed by this notice that it was a person entitled to redeem. And had the treasurer failed to cause this notice to be sent to Vanderbilt, her tax foreclosure sale would have been fatally defective and could not have been confirmed.
Counsel, so, if we look at that same statute over here, this way, if we look at that same statute at the end, it talks about how a parcel may be redeemed.
Yes.
Was it redeemed properly in this case? Was there any payment made to the treasurer directly?
Yes, the trial court ordered that the funds that were on deposit with the clerk of courts be tendered to the treasurer.
So Vanderbilt gave the money to the court and said, we want you to order that this be given to the treasurer.
That's right. And the trial court, in fact, did so.
So do you think that meets the letter of the statute, where the statute says a parcel may redeem the parcel by tendering to the treasurer the full amount of the taxes?
Yes, and I think that's the case, because the crucial part of that statute is at any time prior to confirmation. And prior to the confirmation of sale, that money was ordered paid to the treasurer. So the treasurer did receive that money prior to the confirmation
of
sale.
Is that in our record, that the treasurer did, in fact, receive the money?
There is certainly a court order in record, and I believe that the clerk of courts on the docket will show a payment made to the treasurer.
Okay, thank you.
Could you get into there's a statement in the brief about the treasurer, the county treasurer, having some interest in this property. There seemed to be some concern there.
Sure. The purchaser at the sheriff's sale was a Mr. Machette. Mr. Machette assigned his bid to Alan Doniker and Janet Doniker. Janet Doniker is the treasurer. The former owner of the property was Brandy Doniker, now known as Brandy Wagner. So essentially what happened is the treasurer caused a foreclosure action on her stepdaughter, and the result of that foreclosure action was that her and her husband ended up entitled to the property, free and clear of any liens that encumbered the property, specifically Vanderbilt's lien. And the treasurer caused a notice to be sent to Vanderbilt in compliance with the Ohio Revised Code, telling Vanderbilt that it had an interest in the property and that Vanderbilt specifically had a right to redeem the property at any time prior to sheriff's sale. And when Vanderbilt attempted to do that, the treasurer opposed that effort by Vanderbilt. Treasurer had her prosecutor specifically oppose that effort, and the treasurer's argument was that, no, Vanderbilt, you don't have a right to redeem. Now, the trial court recognized Vanderbilt's right to redeem and issued an order staying the confirmation, ordering the money that Vanderbilt had paid into the court transferred to the treasurer, and vacating the sheriff's sale, thus completing Vanderbilt's redemption of the subject property. The Fifth District Court of Appeals, however, found that Ohio Revised Code 5721.25 does not specifically define the phrase any person entitled to redeem the land.
Counsel, isn't that why we're here today?
That's right. That's
Counsel,
right.
Counsel, isn't that really the narrow issue that you bring to us today?
I believe is
that the statute says any person entitled to redeem the land may do so by tendering to the county treasurer the $6,000. You gave the money to the treasurer. Your client gave the money to the treasurer. correct?
That's right. And the reason why that issue is so narrow is the Fifth District Court of Appeals found that is the narrow issue. That's the matter that I appealed here.
And that's why I asked you. You're saying this started with a duly recorded mortgage on land.
That's
correct.
Right. That's right.
And as a holder of that mortgage, you're saying, if there is a tax sale, you may come in and protect your interest by buying it for the tax money. Correct?
That's one of the ways they can protect. There's a number of ways we could protect the interest, each of which are equally valid. Vanderbilt could protect its interest by advancing the money for taxes before the action's filed. Vanderbilt could protect its interest by bidding in at the sheriff's sale. And an equally valid means of protecting its interest is Vanderbilt could redeem the property after sheriff's sale, but before confirmation.
Well, that's the problem that I think we're going to hear from the other folks fairly soon, is that you sat on your hands. You didn't advance the property taxes. You didn't bid at the sheriff's sale. And then when there is a bona fide purchaser on the horizon, you decide, well, we're now going to exercise our rights. Is that a problem?
I don't believe it's a problem. I think that's the nature of a redemption anytime there's a redemption. And the argument could be posed to a property owner as well. Property owner, you could have paid those taxes at any time. Property owner, you could have came in and bought the property at sheriff's sale for the amount of paying the taxes. But property owner, you waited.
So do you want this court now to say that a bank is the same as a property owner?
What I want this court to do is recognize that the right of redemption in a tax foreclosure sale is different. It's broader than the right in a mortgage foreclosure action, which specifically the statute 2329.33 specifically limits that right to a debtor homeowner. But the reason why the legislature made that right broader in a tax foreclosure sale is that there are not as many protections in place in a tax foreclosure sale to ensure that the property is not forfeited by waste. The amount that a purchaser has to pay a tax foreclosure sale is essentially that of the taxes.
So that's what you want this court to say this morning. We're a person pursuant to that statute.
That's right. That we're a person pursuant to that statute. And the reason why is because while the Fifth District Court of Appeal defined that term as narrowly as possible to mean only the former owner has the right of redemption, this narrow definition utilized by the Fifth District Court of Appeals is at odds with the legislative intent evidenced by Ohio Revised Code 5721.18 and 5721.181. This narrow definition utilized by the Fifth District Court of Appeals does not make sense when it is considered that the only purpose of a tax foreclosure sale is to raise revenue to pay the delinquent taxes. Given this statutory scheme for tax foreclosure sales and the lack of built-in protection for creditors and homeowners provided by that statutory scheme, it makes sense that the right to redeem would be extended broadly so that almost anyone could pay the taxes prior to confirmation and keep the property vested in the former owner and preserve all the liens and mortgages attached to the property. Vanderbilt is requesting that this court clarify the clear statutory intent that the phrase "any person entitled to redeem the land contained within Ohio Revised Code 5721.25 includes mortgage holders, as a mortgage holder has a right to redeem the land from a tax foreclosure sale which is independent and distinct from the rights of the property owner. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Szymanski.
Thank you, Chief. Good morning, Justices. Sam Szymanski on behalf of Mr. Doniker. Justice O'Donnell, you asked the right question, what happened here at the sheriff's sale? And the answer to your question, sir, is it is in the record. It's in the memorandum contra to the motion of Vanderbilt Mortgage when they went back to the court and said, let us get involved, let us start to exercise our rights. And what happened was there was a mortgage on the land, and there was also a mortgage on this double wide. And regrettably, the guy who shows up at the sale for the bank had his marching orders confused. So, of course, he bids 50 grand for a mobile home that isn't worth anything, and then he bids 15,000 flat for the parcel and gets outbid by the treasurer's husband. Well, actually, by the treasurer's husband's nominee, for what it's worth. So, regrettably, even though they've done nothing up until that point, they get to the sale and they screw it up, period, pure and simple. And now they're asking this court to torture the statute.
Well, counsel, when you say they screwed it up, who are you referring to?
Vanderbilt, Your Honor. You asked...
Counsel, will you speak into the microphone, please?
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry.
No, I'm a little confused by your representation. It seems to me that Vanderbilt went to the court and said, let's stop this train here for a second.
No, sir. Procedure. Well, they did at some point do that.
But the problem is that they came to the court after a decision had already been entered. Then the treasurer says, okay, go ahead and intervene. File your cross-claim. Let's get involved. Let's try to solve the problem. But the problem, what?
Counselor, you're confusing me this morning, and that's not hard to do.
Sorry.
The problem that I see is we're here on a very narrow legal question.
Yes, sir.
The gentleman sitting to your left would like to be treated as a person pursuant to the statute. It says he's the same as the property owner. And until the court's gavel goes down confirming the sheriff's sale, no matter how dilatory they've been for the last 210 years, they may stand up and say, here's your money, I'm buying the property.
That's the whole issue.
So let's stay there.
Yes, sir. So
why is that wrong?
Imagine a world where, as a property owner, you've put your heart and soul into a piece of land, and you decide, for whatever reason, I just can't pay the taxes, I'm going to let it go to sale. You then have a change of heart at the last minute. Just like the mortgage redemption statute, the only person that can redeem is the owner. Why? Because it gives bona fide purchasers at every sheriff's sale across the state of Ohio some confidence in the proceeding. So why let the bank or anybody else, if you want to follow the bank's logic, anybody with an interest in the property, cherry pick at the end?
But isn't your problem with the Ohio General Assembly rather than this court?
Absolutely. You shouldn't be legislating.
The statute says any person. It doesn't say only the property owner. It says any person entitled to redeem.
Right. The question is, who is entitled to redeem? It's undefined. And the legislature should define it. But we know historically who can redeem. We know what the mortgage statute says as to who can redeem. And we know where the equities lie. Why would, and conversely, why would a bank want to become an owner if you focus on their other arguments and assume liability, have to take out insurance, be subject to...
Banks do that all the time on properties.
I'm sorry?
I said, don't banks do that all the time, and mortgage companies all the time on properties that have been foreclosed upon?
They foreclose, and then it goes to a sheriff's sale. Then if they choose to purchase and assume ownership, that's fine.
Right.
But if you buy into my colleague's argument, they become an owner by virtue of default on the mortgage. That's what appellant would have you believe as they try to, I hesitate to say torture, but that's the best word that comes to mind, as they try to get you to accept this tortured logic.
But your initial statement was, why would a bank want to do this?
They wouldn't.
It all the time. They manage properties all the time. So that's not really, the policy that you're arguing against, that this just doesn't make sense.
Chief, I know the only thing I'm suggesting is that one of the arguments is that immediately upon default, the bank becomes the owner. I'm suggesting that's nonsensical, because why would a bank want to assume ownership of a piece of property? Then they'd have to take out insurance and be liable. They only assume ownership if they buy it at a sale. Then they alert their legal department. Okay, we need a policy of the
insurance. Okay, and isn't Vanderbilt saying here, if I redeem the taxes, I stand in the shoes of the owner here?
Well, they'd like you to believe that, but as a precedent to that, they're saying we have the right to do that because we become, quote, a legal owner by virtue of default. And I realize it doesn't make sense, but that's what they'd like you to believe.
But counsel, if you look at 5721.181.
Yes, ma'am.
The paragraph that starts, at any time prior to filing of an entry of confirmation of sale, any owner or lien holder of or other person with an interest in a parcel in the complaint may redeem the parcel.
Yes, ma'am. That notice statute is as inartfully worded as it could be. And Justice Lanziger, if you think for a minute about that statute, it confers notice. But then if you look at 25, the actual redemption statute, it's got a whole host of requirements that one a redeemer must meet before redeeming.
But it says any person.
I know.
And that any person is defined in that in the language that I just read, is it not?
It is, ma'am, but it is a notice statute. It does not confer a right. It attempts to confer a right from the perspective of appellant, but it doesn't confer a right. It directs the clerk to give interested parties notice that something's happening with this property.
What's the intent of that? Why would you give them notice if they're not entitled to act upon receiving that notice?
Because I believe that the legislature has said, hey, clerks, it's incumbent upon you to let interested parties know that something is happening. But it clearly doesn't give instruction. There is a redemption statute. There's a 25 is the redemption statute.
And the redemption statute refers to any person entitled to redeem the land may do so by tendering, etc.
Yes,
any
ma'am.
Any person.
Yes, ma'am. But it doesn't say who that person is. That's the problem. It should say, just as the mortgage redemption statute says, the debtor. Because why would we want anybody but the property owner to be able to redeem? That's an 11th hour stopgap measure that has historically and always in this state been granted
so who
to
would
the
suffer,
owner.
So who would suffer if Vanderbilt and similarly situated mortgage companies were able to do this?
Every person that showed up at the sheriff's sale and bid in a process that was fair and open and put down their hard-earned money, they suffer, certainly.
Well,
the treasurers across the state will suffer.
No, the treasurers aren't going to suffer because they're going to tender the money to fill the treasurer's coffers in order to redeem the property. So I'm presuming it's the taxes plus the cost of the treasurer.
Yes, ma'am, but what will happen is that people will be reluctant to go to a treasurer's tax sale if they know they can be cherry-picked at the end. I mean, why would you go tender $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 at a sale only to figure, gee, I'm going to have to litigate this, or 3 months down the road,
doesn't
I'm going to get
bumped. Doesn't that happen in a normal foreclosure, too? You take subject to the redemption at some point?
But the only person against whom, the only person that can redeem is the property owner.
Correct.
But now we're going to expand it to, and if you look at the statute, as Justice Lanziger points out, it says any person with an interest in the property, a neighbor, a developer, anybody
I believe Justice Lanziger said a lien holder.
Yes,
don't,
ma'am. That's
don't,
yes,
don't they have kind of strong standing, a lien holder that's out $85,000?
They have a standing in their note. True. They have a standing in their security interest. True. But they are not owners of the property for purposes of redemption. They should not be permitted to, first of all, we're getting into an equitable argument. Our position is, of course, they shouldn't be allowed to do that. That's for the property owner. That's the person that has put his heart or her heart and soul into a piece of property their whole lives. They go belly up over $800 in taxes, as happened here. They don't pay their mortgage for a year. So they get to choose how they want to dispose of their property. Vanderbilt has every right in the world to come and buy that property. Or they have a right to pay the $800 in taxes to the proper political entity and redeem.
Mr. Szymanski, it just seems that your policy argument makes some sense, but it's a matter for the General Assembly to change the language I've just read to you.
Absolutely.
To read, any owner may redeem. Right now it doesn't say that.
Yes,
any
ma'am.
Any owner, lien holder, or other person with an interest in. You want us to strike the other person with interest in and lien holder from the definition that says, here's who can redeem.
I would be fine if you would do that, but you point out correctly that it's a matter for the legislature. The statute makes no sense. We're twisting it. It says any person entitled to redeem. Who is that? They would if they were going to define a class of people, they wouldn't put in the entitled to redeem. We just don't know. That's why we're having this discussion, I would submit.
Can't we look to the mortgage itself?
I'm sorry, Justice?
Can't we look to the mortgage itself?
Well,
does it not grant rights to Vanderbilt?
What the mortgage itself says is that we're allowed to advance taxes on your behalf and then charge you. And an Ohio law has a statute that governs that eventuality if it happens. And it says that you must have those terms and conditions spelled out in the mortgage. So the Ohio law allows that. But there's no statute that says just because you've advanced taxes, you can thus redeem or that you now stand in the place of an owner.
But wouldn't we be able to answer that question by looking at the mortgage at issue in this case to see whether Vanderbilt actually holds that right to redeem or holds that right to pay taxes?
I will tell you, they hold the right to pay taxes. I've looked at the mortgage and it's in there.
Doesn't that mean they have the right to redeem?
No, ma'am. And nowhere in there does it. I mean, there's not a single case in every court of appeal that's looked at this has said, no, the only person that redeems is the landowner. Why would you have a sheriff's sale where anybody could come in later and redeem? It makes zero sense.
Did you say every court that's looked at it has reached that conclusion?
Yes, sir.
On tax foreclosures or on foreclosure cases?
I think on tax cases, sir. And we cited, I think, four or five courts of appeal decisions in our brief that clearly state redemption is strictly for the property owner. So, again, you know, these facts can make your head hurt. The procedure here is what it is. Everybody knows that the bank did nothing, and now they're trying to figure out a way around their mistakes. And I don't point that out to be critical, but that's what happened. And the point is that this is a matter for the legislature to adopt. And lastly, had the bank done anything correctly, we wouldn't be here. They did absolutely nothing right.
So, counsel, you started by saying that there were two mortgages.
Yes, ma'am.
Was on the mobile home, and one was on the land.
And there were two separate case numbers and two tax sales.
Okay, so the crux of this is that had Vanderbilt shown up and bid correctly,
yes, they would have preserved their interest.
They would have had this property.
Yes, ma'am. And they could have avoided the whole kit and caboodle by paying $800 to the proper political entity, that being the treasurer, not the clerk of courts.
And when you say this is a matter for the legislature, are you asking us to just dismiss the case and send it over there?
What I think is appropriate.
What is the transition of matter?
Yes, sir. I would affirm the Court of Appeals decision. I would get on the phone to one of the legislatures in whom you have confidence and say, here's an issue that needs to be addressed. Let's do something. I don't see it as that difficult. You know, it's just an issue that needs to be addressed. And I don't know why we would want to be trying to address it judicially when it is a legislative fix.
Counsel, the lender bid in the mobile home at, say, at 50?
$50K, yes, Your Honor.
And where did that money go?
Well, it would have gone to the treasurer, who would have, you know, I don't know the answer to that. Now that I think about it, I mean, it was at a treasurer's tax sale because there was a tax lien on it. So I'm not going to presume a thing. I can't tell you. It's a good question. I wish I had the answer for it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, you've saved about 2 minutes. Is this the representation that your person who showed up at the sheriff's sale got it mixed up? Is that true?
There's no evidence in the record of that. That is a complete invention.
Well, you did pay $50,000 for a mobile home.
Sure. Paid $50,000 for a mobile home in a completely separate case. That case isn't at appeal.
Where did that money go?
I'm sorry. I didn't.
Where did the money go?
The money for the mobile home?
Yeah.
The money for the mobile home paid the treasurer, and then it was distributed to the lien holders in that case. In this case...
And who was the lien holder that got that? Vanderbilt?
Vanderbilt would have been a lien holder. I'm not sure if they were the only lien holder. But pursuant to the statutory dictates of how those monies are distributed...
So... You got your money back?
Some of it. I would admit that there was some money that came back to Vanderbilt. I'm not sure how much came back to
Counsel,
Vanderbilt.
Counsel, I've got a couple of these. How do you get your money back? Did you have a $50,000 mortgage on the mobile home?
There was Vanderbilt bid up to the amount of its debt on the mobile home. Separate mortgages.
So you paid yourself?
But that's right. That's what happens in all of these tax foreclosure, in any foreclosure action when it's
Vanderbilt
when a
loaned 50 on the mobile home in addition to the land?
Money that it lended on the home, yes.
Are you sure that they didn't pay off their loan on the land with the money from the purchase of the mobile home?
I don't know if I understand your question.
Oh, you do. I think you do.
Okay. Are they paid off the loan?
Paid off the other loan.
Okay.
The loan on the land with the money from that they gave the court for the mobile home.
Okay. Assuming that's the case, which I'm not sure. I'm not sure how that's relevant.
I asked you the question. Do you know the answer?
I don't know the answer.
Do you know the mortgages on the land and the mortgage on the mobile home? What the two mortgages were?
What the total amounts were?
Yes,
due?
On each.
I don't. I know the total amount due was some $85,000. Three quick points I wanted to make. Pursuant to 5721.01, which is the definition clauses of the tax foreclosure thing, a person is defined as any corporation, individual, owner, lien holder, that's out there. Additionally, the statute 5301.233, which it permits mortgage holders to advance taxes, doesn't limit when that can be done. It doesn't say you can advance the payment of taxes only up to the date that a tax foreclosure is filed or only up to the date of a tax foreclosure sale. Additionally, they mentioned that there's four cases that have already looked at this issue, and that's just not true. The Fifth District is the first appellate court that has looked at this specific issue. Two of the cases that they cited involved people who tried to redeem who had no interest in the property at the time the tax foreclosure was initiated and later acquired their interest. And the other two cases that they cited said that an owner is sufficient to redeem, that an owner is one of the people that can redeem, but not the only person that can redeem. It doesn't come out and say that only an owner can redeem. It just acknowledges that an owner may redeem from a tax foreclosure sale. So the Fifth District's interpretation is the first interpretation of this exact issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We will take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you call a recess, please?